And welcome back to After Dark number 4. This is tape number 3. This is side number 2. And this is Fred Bobby behind the microphone. And we're going to have some dry reading because we're going to be reading a document entitled Pioneer Broadcast Stations in the United States, which was written by Mr. Thomas H. White on June 1 of 1992. This is rather long and technical, but it's something I think that a lot of you would find very interesting, including a list of the oldest broadcast stations. Any review of the first broadcast stations is complicated by conflicting interpretations and claims, plus a scarcity of information. This is an overview of the pioneer stations granted broadcast authorizations, plus a review of the government policies in force at that time. Establishment of the broadcast service. As with most innovations, there was a lag between the development of broadcasting and formal recognition of its existence by government regulators. In the United States, beginning in 1912, radio was regulated by the Department of Commerce's Bureau of Navigation. One of the first steps taken by the Bureau, as recorded in the September 28, 1912 edition of Regulations Governing Radio Communication, was to divide land station licenses into 8 classes. 1. Public service. 2. Limited commercial. 3. Experimental. 4. Technical and training school. 5. General amateur. 6. Special amateur. 7. Restricted amateur. And 8. High power. The high power class was soon dropped, and its stations absorbed into other categories. None of the licensed classes included any reference to broadcasting. Thus, in the period of broadcast development and experimentation, leading to the formal adoption of regulations in 1921, stations licensed under a number of classifications made experimental broadcasts. For example, among the numerous stations that engaged in early broadcast development, KDKA in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, held a limited commercial license. Many stations, including DeForest's High Bridge Station 2XG in New York City and California Theater Station 6XC in San Francisco, plus the American Radio and Research Corporation's 1XE in Medford Hillside, Massachusetts, and Frank Conrad's 8XK in Pittsburgh, operated under experimental authorizations. While additional stations, including the University of Nebraska's 9YY in Lincoln, had technical and training school licenses. Other early dabblers in broadcasting included the Detroit News 8MK, held a general amateur license, while KDKA's initial November 2, 1920 election broadcast actually went out under a temporary special amateur authorization, call sign 8ZZ. In addition, there were government stations exempted from the Commerce Department regulation, including AGI, operated by the Army Signal Corps at the Presidio in San Francisco, California, and the Navy's NOF, NSF, located in Anacostia, D.C. Adoption of Broadcast Service Regulations. On December 1, 1921, the Bureau of Navigation formally established standards for the first time for a broadcast service. The new regulations were reported in the January 3, 1922 edition of the Radio Service Bulletin. However, instead of creating a new license class, broadcasting was set up as a service category within the existing limited commercial classification. Broadcasting would not become a separate license until radio regulation was transferred by the Federal Radio Commission in 1927. The new broadcast service was assigned 2 wavelengths, 360 meters or 833 kilohertz, for broadcasting news, concerts, and such matter, and 485 meters or 619 kilohertz for broadcasting crop reports and weather forecasts. Thus, depending on the service rendered, a broadcast station could be licensed for 360 meters, 485 meters, or for both wavelengths. Stations using same wavelengths in the same area had to share time in order to avoid interference. Also, a station license for both wavelengths had to switch from one wavelength to the other whenever its program fell into another service category. This dual wavelength setup was dropped in May of 1923 when the number of broadcast wavelengths was greatly expanded. Under the new standards, in order to be permitted to make broadcasts intended for the general public, a station had to hold a limited commercial license, and its license also had to authorize use of broadcast wavelengths. Therefore, limited commercial stations that did not have an authorization to use the broadcast wavelengths and stations operating under other license classifications no longer were permitted to broadcast to the public. Government stations remained exempt from the commercial department control, so some continued to make some broadcasts. The Bureau's introduction of broadcast service standards actually formalized developments of the previous 2.5 months. At the time of the introduction of new regulations, 9 stations already held limited commercial licenses authorizing the use of 360 meters for broadcasting purposes. The existence of this group of stations was a side effect of a wavelength assignment request made by the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company. Westinghouse's famous KDKA in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, was first licensed as a limited commercial station on October 27, 1920. According to early publicity, KDKA's initial broadcasts went through the fall of 1921, went out on the wavelength of 330 meters or 909 kilohertz, and with the success of KDKA in the fall of 1921, Westinghouse began to set up 3 additional broadcast stations, WJZ, WBZ, and KYW, which initially were assigned to a variety of wavelengths. According to an article in the September 1922 edition of Radio News, at this point, Westinghouse's L.R. Crum asked the Bureau of Navigation to assign all the Westinghouse stations to a single wavelength, 360 meters. The first Westinghouse station to be issued a license for 360 meters was WBZ on September 15, 1921. During the next 2 months, the other 3 Westinghouse stations were also issued licenses specifically using 360 meters. Moreover, in the period before the December 1st adoption of the new regulations, 5 other new stations began set up for public broadcasting by other companies, and they were WDY, WCJ, WBL, WJX, and KQL. Also were licensed by the Bureau of Navigation as a limited commercial station operating on 360 meters. Thus, at the time of the adoption of the December 1st regulations, limited commercial licenses for 360 meters had already been informally established as a standard operating setup for broadcast stations. The new broadcasting service regulations didn't require the 9 stations already on 360 meters to make any changes because they already met the new standards. In view of this, lists of the first broadcast stations issued over the years by the Federal Radio Commission and the Federal Communications Commission generally began with these 9 360 meter assignments, starting with WBC on September 15, 1921. Exceptions and additions. A problem with using the 360 meter grants to identify WBZ as the first broadcast station is that this is seemingly an overlay of restrictive standard. The question is whether there are radio stations which can claim existence as broadcast stations prior to WBZ. Now, in my view, 2 of the Westinghouse stations, KDKA in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and WJZ in Newark, New Jersey, which is now WABC New York, qualify as being senior to WBZ. Both KDKA and WJZ were specifically set up to become full-time broadcast stations and receive limited commercial licenses, although neither initially specified 360 meters. KDKA was first licensed on October 27, 1920, but did not receive a license specifying 360 meters until November 7, 1921. However, it's very possible that KDKA switched to 360 meters before the new license was issued, since its first license also didn't specify the 330-meter wavelength it was initially used. WJZ was first licensed in May of 1921, and was issued a new license specifying 360 meters on September 30, 1921. Thus, given Westinghouse's pioneering work in the following lists of broadcast stations, KDKA and WJZ are listed accordingly to their initial license dates of October 27, 1920 and May 1921, respectively. Of course, once you start developing your own standards, others tend to come up with suggestions. Most of the broadcasting stations set up under the December 1st regulations were licensed to individuals or companies that had operated earlier radio stations. This includes KDKA, which was an outgrowth of Frank Conrad's 8XK. The earliest claim is by KQW in San Jose, which is now KCBS in San Francisco, which identifies its predecessors dating back to 1909. Although some of these early stations utilize spark transmitters, others use continuous wave transmitters and in some cases had conducted experimental broadcasts. Thus, in many cases, broadcast stations are claimed to actually date back to licenses issued to predecessor stations. However, to the best of my knowledge, none of these predecessor stations can really be considered to be broadcast stations. At best, they were radio stations that also made broadcasts, with their broadcast secondary or in addition to the station's normal functions. So at the risk of bodily harm, I personally see no compelling reason to date the broadcast station ranks any earlier than KDKA's initial authorizations. Licensing policies and procedures. As noted earlier, licensing at the time of the creation of broadcasting service was conducted under the provisions of an act passed in 1912. Although the standards since the 1927 formation of the Federal Radio Commission has been that stations serve public convenience, interest, or necessity, no comparable guideline was mandated by the 1912 Act, and licensing of pioneer broadcast service stations amounted to little more than registration. Licensing authorization was vested in the Secretary of Commerce and exercised through the Bureau of Navigation. This body operated on a much more informal basis than successor regulators. Moreover, control was more decentralized, with oversight performed primarily by 9 regional radio inspectors, generally limited to ensuring that stations maintained technical standards. The procedure normally used to procure a broadcast license in the early 20s was as follows. The prospective station operator filled out an applicant's description of apparatus, which by the way was Form 761, obtained from the region's radio inspector. The completed form, which provided mostly technical information, was submitted to the inspector, who, if deemed necessary, inspected the proposed apparatus. Next, the form, including the inspector's report, plus a recommendation on the type of authorization that should be issued, was forwarded to the Commissioner of Navigation in Washington, D.C. Now, in the case of new stations, two distinct steps took place. First, when Form 761 was received in Washington, the station was immediately assigned a call sign, which was written at the top of the form. Later, if everything was in order, a license was issued. If the station's equipment had not been inspected, the license was issued with a notation, provisional. The time period between assigning call letters and issuing a license range from immediate action to as much as 40 days, and according to commerce records, was usually in the range of 1 to 3 days. The assignment of the call sign was not considered as establishing a new station. Stations were not reported in the radio service bulletin until the first operating authorization. Usually a license, but in a few cases a preliminary telephoned or telegraphed authorization was issued. License periods for broadcast stations throughout the early 20s range from as few as 10 days to 1 year, with 1 year licenses the norm for grants made until early January 1922, 6 months from the standard mid-January 1922, and 3 months from the norm thereafter. License renewal was obtained via the submission of an updated Form 761 at the required intervals. A serial license number was assigned to the first license issued a given station, which normally was carried over to a later license issued to the station. Occasionally, the same license number was accidentally given to two different stations. In that case, a one-half was added to one of the license numbers. Some mistakes were never caught. According to a penciled note, WBU's initial February 21, 1922 license was supposed to be numbered 299. Instead, it was stamped 219, and this number was kept for its later licenses. Although the above procedure was once normally used, Commerce Files reported that in a few cases the process was accelerated by direct letters, telegrams, and telephone conversations between applicants and Washington officials. Station deletions. Station deletions in the early 20s were performed with ever less formality and consistency than licensing. When a station discontinued broadcasting before the end of a license period, the station operator could return the license for cancellation. However, it appears that in most cases, the station owners didn't bother. Instead, they just let the licenses expire in due course. Moreover, the lapse of a station license was seen as no more than a close of operating authorization and rarely resulted in immediate deletion from the official station lists. Generally, a grace period was allowed, on the assumption that many stations would eventually be relicensed. The time span between the expiration of a license and the formal deletion greatly varied, and according to the Commerce Files, most stations were not removed from the published list until 1 to 6 months after their operating license had lapsed. The whole process has a distinct "we'll delete them when we get around to it" feel, and it appears that has been to some degree dependent on the diligence of the district radio inspectors. Because of the flexible deletion practices, a number of stations deleted in a given month is not a precise measure of the decline of activity for that month, as the licenses for many of these stations had in fact expired a number of weeks or months before. Likewise, official lists of this period invariably included stations no longer holding active licenses and merely waiting formal removal. Temporary stations. One category of broadcast station had been almost completely undocumented, that of the temporary grants. These were issued for special occasions, usually lasting for a month or less, and were not reported in the radio service bulletin. There is little information about these grants recorded in the Commerce Files, although at least 70 were issued in the period from January 1922 to October of 1928. For temporary grants made through May of 1922, where wavelength information is recorded, the wavelength assigned was always 360 meters. Histories for five temporary stations operated by educational organizations can be found in S.E. Frost's Education's Own Stations, Bancroft School, Haddonfield, New Jersey, WRAQ, Gardenville High School, Gardenville, New York, WGHS, Gettysburg College, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, WDBG, Milton College in Milton, Wisconsin, WSAM, and Northern State Normal School in Marquette, Michigan, WBI. Here are some temporary broadcast station grants through May 1922. The first station on the list is WPU in Buffalo, New York, owned by the Buffalo Courier and Enquirer. Its call was assigned on January 1920. Then was KDP in Seattle, Washington, the St. James Cathedral, on 2-2. WHO in Kansas City, Missouri, by the Kansas City Post, 2 days. Then there was WWS in Pella, Iowa. They were owned by the Fowler Telephone Company. WBI in Marquette, Michigan, Northern State Normal School. This license was only for 2 days. WTB in Evansville, Indiana, by the Seifert Electric Company. WSH, New York, New York. This was a experimenter information service, which was only authorized for 2 days. Then there was WMX in Port Huron, Michigan, which is owned by the Port Huron Times-Herald, also broadcast several months later on March of 1927 and 1922. Then there was WTA in Yorksville, Ohio, which was owned by the Board of Trade. WDS in Richmond, Virginia, which is owned by a gentleman by the name of Mann, M-A-N-N-S, Valentine. Then WAAT in Jerseyside, New Jersey, owned by the Jersey Review, which also broadcast later on April 19, 1922. Then WAAU, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is owned by H.C. Couser. WBAC in Des Moines, Iowa. This station was owned by the Kiwanis Club, 2 days, for 2 days starting on April 1923. WCAI in Topeka, Kansas. This station was owned by the American Legion. And finally, WEAL in Des Moines, Iowa. This was owned by the Mystic Shrine, a special train on a coast-to-coast exhibition. Call letter policies. One area which has been particularly murky is that of call letter policies. Following the adoption of the 1912 Act, call signs for most non-amateur services were composed of three letters. Because most early commercial land stations were clustered along the coast, the original policy for land stations was that those on the Pacific coast were normally assigned call letters starting with K, while calls starting with W were normally assigned to outlets along the Great Lakes and the Atlantic and Gulf of Mexico coasts. With the development of inland stations, further refinement was required. As land stations, broadcasters have generally followed the K's in the west, W's in the east standard. However, two different east-west dividing lines have been used. Originally, the boundary ran along the eastern borders of Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico. In late January 1923, the line was shifted eastward to the current standard of the Mississippi River. The rapid expansion of the ship's service during World War I required utilization of four-letter calls for ship stations, including, in alphabetical order, calls from the K-E, K-I, K-O, and K-U, and starting in June of 1920, K-D blocks. Land stations generally continued to receive three-letter calls. The assignment of the conspicuous call, KDKA, to the Pioneer East Pittsburgh broadcaster has been viewed as evidence of some sort of special status. However, review of the radio service bulletin shows what actually occurred was more mundane. For some reason, during the period of June 1920 through April 1921, most commercial land stations received calls from the four-letter ship blocks and by nothing more significant than coincidence, KDKA was the only broadcaster to be born in this period. The policy of three-letter calls for land stations was restored after this lapse, until the flood of broadcasting grants required that the broadcasting service switch to four-letter calls, with the Western broadcasting stations shared the KD and later the KF and KG blocks with ship stations, while Eastern broadcasters were assigned calls from the WA and later WB blocks. Some received calls outside these blocks due to special requests, and eventually individual call requests became the norm. Critique of period sources. While preparing the chronological lists of station activities, some idiosyncrasies of three traditional sources of licensing information has become apparent. The best generally available source of information for the early 20s is the Radio Service Bulletin issued by the Bureau of Navigation, which reports monthly the changes, deletions, and new station grants made during the preceding months. Three important characteristics of the bulletin have sometimes been overlooked. The first is that its station lists do not report chronologically the grants within a given month, as the bulletin lists always use non-chronological formats, such as alphabetically by the city of license or the call sign. Second, a few stations entered the broadcasting service classification by metamorphosis from another service category, so their debuts are recorded in the alterations and corrections lists, rather than the new station lists, which report the appearance of more conventional entries to the service. This alternate route was used by three stations in the period through May of 1922, KQV Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, KDPT San Diego, California, and WRR Dallas, Texas. Third, broadcast station additions, changes, and deletions were not reported in a separate category until the July 1, 1922 edition. Prior to this date, they were intermixed with the other classes of commercial land stations, so care must be taken in extracting broadcast service information. The bulletin was not completely free from occasional typographical errors. For example, in the January 2, 1922 issue, both KJB Everett, Washington, and KFL in Seattle, Washington, are incorrectly listed as being broadcast grants, and one station, WGI, later WARC in Medford Hillside, Massachusetts, seemed to have disappeared without benefit of official notification. However, overall, there were a few minor discrepancies between information contained in the bulletin and that found in the government records. Another source of licensing information proved somewhat more suspect. W.E. Downing, supervisor of radio at the Department of Commerce, appears to have regularly provided monthly totals of broadcasting station additions, deletions, and outstanding authorizations. As you'll hear in the list which I'm about to read, there's a number of discrepancies for the period through May of 1922 between the monthly figures reported by Downey and the information contained in the Commerce records and the radio service bulletins. For example, W.E. Downey figures, their research figures, show that in the month of 1922, September, three new stations, zero deleted, three increased, three total. In October, one new station, one deleted, four increased, for a total of three. In November of 1921, one new station, one deleted, five increased, two stations total, which by the way includes KDKA. In December of 1921, 23 new stations, zero deleted, for an increase of 23 and a total of 28. Now, in 1922, in January, there were 8 news stations, 0 deletions, 8 increases, for a total of 36. February, there was 24 new stations, none deleted, 24 increases, for a total of 60. In March, there was 77 new stations, 0 deletions, 77 increased stations, and 137 total. In April of 1922, another 77 new stations, none deleted, for an increase of 76 and a total of 213. And in May of 1922, there was 97 new stations, 0 deleted, 97 increase, for a total of 310. There's your mathematics. You work it out. The most troubling feature about the Donny figures is the complete absence of its deletions. In fact, Donny reports no deletions until September of 1922. However, review of the commerce records and the radio service bulletin clearly show that 15 stations were deleted prior to September, beginning with the 2 in March. Since Donny figures do not list specific stations, the cause of the omission is not clear. Finally, the new station totals appeared in a Gleason's Archer's History of Radio to 1926 have a readily identifiable flaw. These figures are inflated because the actual are the number of new commercial land stations reported by the Radio Service Bulletin. As noted earlier, this means the figures erroneously include many non-broadcast service grants, and many omit the few transfers to the broadcast service that were not reported in the change lists. Broadcast service lists. Included at the end of this article is a chronological list of all the broadcast service additions, deletions, and changes that took place during a period of October 1920 through May of 1922. The vast majority of these actions are new station grants. Station additions are listed chronologically by their initial broadcast authorization date, normally the date of their first broadcast service license. In a few cases, an authorization to broadcast was made before the station's first license was issued. Initial authorizations by telephone and telegraph stations are noted as TP and TG, respectively. STA stands for Special Temporary Authorization, which, by the way, is still used today, while AUT appears in a case where the station is only listed as authorized. Included with the initial authorization date is the station's call sign, city of license, owner, and assigned frequency. The 9 radio inspection districts were headquartered in the following locations: BOS, Boston, Massachusetts; NYC, New York, New York; BAL in Baltimore, Maryland; SAV, Savannah, Georgia; NO, New Orleans, Louisiana; SF, San Francisco, California; SEA, Seattle, Washington; DET, Detroit, Michigan; and CHI, Chicago, Illinois. In addition, a few of the Form 761s came via Norfolk, Virginia, NOR, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, PHI. Most exceptions to the standard procedure occurred when the station's owner dealt directly with Washington via telephone, telegraph or letter, or call letter reservation. In one case, W.E. Downing was listed as the person involved in making the call letter assignment. Summary. The information presented will hopefully provide a more complete understanding of the policies of the period and permit more detailed analysis of the development of the broadcast service. For instance, the list of new broadcast station grants shows the abrupt shift from the slow initial expansion of the service through November of 1921, with the first grants dominated by Northeast and Midwest radio equipment firms, to the popular expansion that began in December of 1921, when owners of all kinds of sponsored stations took place. This popularization has every appearance of a rapidly spreading West Coast fad, as fully 16 of the 22 grants made from December of 1921 to January 4, 1922, were for West Coast facilities. The 319 entries actually comprised only 317 different stations because the Marshfield Gherkin Company, WBAJ in Toledo, Ohio, was a relicensing of its deleted WDZ, and the electric lighting supply company's KNX in Los Angeles, California, supplanted its earlier KGC. According to my research, 90 of the 319 entries are listed as surviving to this day, although only as 88 different stations. In addition to KGC and KNX being essentially the same station, WFI and WDAR in Philadelphia were consolidated in 1935 and are now WEAZ. Thus, based on the research list that follows, below are the 88 United States broadcast stations that date back to May 1922 and have survived to this date. Now here's a list of the oldest broadcast stations in the United States. This is the top 88. Number 1, leading the pack, on October 27, 1920, KDKA 1020 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Number 2, in May of 1921, WABC 770 New York. Number 3, on 9/15 of 21, WBZ 1030 in Boston, Massachusetts. Number 4, on October 13, 1921, WWJ 950 Detroit, Michigan. Number 5, in November of 1921, KYW 1060, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Number 6, on December 7, 1921, was KWG 1230 in Stockton, California. Number 7, on December 8, 1921, KNX 1070 in Los Angeles, California. Number 8, on December 9, 1921, KCBS 740 in San Francisco, California. Number 9, on January 9, 1922, KQV 1410 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Number 10, on January 13, 1922, KUOM 770 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Number 11, on January 13, 1922, WHA 970 in Madison, Wisconsin. Number 12, on February 4th, 1922, WGY 810 in Schenectady, New York. Number 13, on February 18th, 1922, WOC 1420 in Davenport, Iowa. Number 14, on February 20th, 1922, WOR 710 in New York, New York. Number 15, on February 21st, 1922, WHK 1420 in Cleveland, Ohio. Number 16, on February 28, 1922, KAQQ 590 in Spokane, Washington. Number 17, on March 2nd, 1922, WLW 700 in Cincinnati, Ohio. Number 18, on March 9th, 1922, KJR 950, Seattle, Washington. Number 19, on February 10th, 1922, KDIA 1310 in Oakland, California. Number 20, on March 10th, 1922, KWKW 1330 in Los Angeles, California. Number 21, on March 10th, 1922, KLZ 560 in Denver, Colorado. Number 22, on the 11th of March, 1922, KBLX 1400 in Berkeley, California. Number 23, on March 13, 1922, KAAM 1310 in Dallas, Texas. Number 24, on the 14th of March, 1922, KUSA 550 in St. Louis, Missouri. Number 25, on March 14, 1922, WGR 550 in Buffalo, New York. Number 26, on March the 14th, 1922, KGU 760 in Honolulu. Number 27, on March 15th, 1922, WSB 750 in Atlanta, Georgia. Number 28, on March 16th, 1922, WKY 930 in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Number 29, on March 18th, 1922, WEVD 1050 in New York, New York. Number 30, on March 18th, 1922, KKHJ 930 in Los Angeles, California. Number 31, on March 18th, 1922, WBT 1110 in Charlotte, North Carolina. Number 32, on March 18th, 1922, WEAZ 560, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Also in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, number 33, on the March the 20th, 1922, WIP 610. Number 34, on March 21st, 1922, KGW 620 in Portland, Oregon. Number 35, on March 22nd, 1922, KTHR 740 in Houston, Texas. Number 36, on March 23rd, 1922, WEW 770 in St. Louis, Missouri. On number 37 spot, on March 23rd, 1922, KMJ 580 in Fresno, California. Number 38 is held by station WILL 580, licensed on March the 28th, 1922, in Urbana, Illinois. Number 39, on March 29th, 1922, WMAQ 760, Chicago, Illinois. Number 40, on March 30th, 1922, KGY 1240 in Olympia, Washington. Also in Washington, at number 41, on March 30th, 1922, KKMO 1360 in Tacoma, Washington. Number 42, March the 31st, 1922, KFI 640, Los Angeles, California. Number 43, on March 31st, 1922, WWL 870 in New Orleans, Louisiana. Number 44, on April the 5th, 1922, WBAA 920 in West Lafayette, Indiana. Number 45, on April the 5th, 1922, KKOB 770 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Number 46, on April the 5th, 1922, WRTH 1430 in St. Louis, Missouri. Number 47, on April 5th, 1922, WDZ 1050 in Decatur, Illinois. Number 48, on April 5th, 1922, KMBZ at 980 in Kansas City, Missouri. Number 49, on April 6, 1922, KKSU 580 in Manhattan, Kansas. Number 50, on April 7, 1922, WJPC 950 in Chicago, Illinois. Number 51, April 10, 1922, WNEW 1130 in New York, New York. Number 52 is on April the 12th, 1922, KBBT 970 in Portland, Oregon. Number 53, on April the 17th, 1922, KJBO 1150 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. 54 is April 17th, 1922, KNBR 680 in San Francisco, California. Number 55, on April 19th, 1922, KCRO 660 in Omaha, Nebraska. Number 56, on April 22nd, 1922, KSL 1160, Salt Lake City, Utah. Number 57, on April 22nd, 1922, KKFX 1250 in Seattle, Washington. Number 58, on April 25th, 1922, WSOY 1340 in Decatur, Illinois. Number 59, on April 26, 1922, WBAP 820 in Fort Worth, Texas. Number 60 is on April the 28th, 1922, WOI 640 in Ames, Iowa. Number 61, on April the 29th, 1922, WTBN 610, Columbus, Ohio. Number 62, on April the 29th, 1922, WBAX 1240 in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Number 63, on May 3rd, 1922, KNEW 910 in Oakland, California. Number 64, on April the 3rd, 1922, WTAE 1250 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Number 65, on April the 4th, 1922, WJR 760 Detroit. Number 66, on April the 8th, 1922, WCAO 600 in Baltimore, Maryland. Number 67, on April the 8th, 1922, KCPX 1320 in Salt Lake City, Utah. Number 68, on May 9th, 1922, KTSA 550 in San Antonio, Texas. Number 69 is WOGL 1210 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Number 70 is WHB 710, licensed on May 10th, 1922 in Kansas City, Missouri. Number 71 on May 13th, 1922, WVMT 620 in Burlington, Vermont. Number 72 on May 13th, 1922, WBNS 1460 in Columbus, Ohio. Number 73 on May 15th, 1922, WDAE 1250 in Tampa, Florida. Number 74, on May 15th, 1922, WTMJ 620, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Number 75, on May 15th, 1922, WCAZ 990 in Carthage, Illinois. Number 76, on May 16th, 1922, WDAF 610 in Kansas City, Missouri. Number 77 is held on May the 16th, 1922, by KGNC 710 in Amarillo, Texas. Number 78 was licensed on May 19th, 1922, WFAN 660, New York, New York. Number 79 on May 19th, 1922, KEEL 710 in Shreveport, Louisiana. Number 80 on May 19th, 1922, WGN 720 in Chicago, Illinois. Number 81 on May 23rd, 1922, KULL 1300 in Seattle, Washington. Number 82 on May 23rd, 1922, WDAY 710 in Fargo, North Dakota. Number 83 on May 25th, 1922, WFDF 910 in Flint, Michigan. Number 84 is on May 26, 1922, KFH 1330 in Wichita, Kansas. Number 85 on May 27, 1922, KUSD 690 in Vermilion, South Dakota. Number 86 on May 27, 1922, KHCU 870 in Ithaca, New York. Number 87 on May 31st, 1922, KTTS 1260 in Springfield, Missouri. And finally, number 88 on May 31st, 1922, KHOW 630, Denver, Colorado. The Commerce Department's call and licensing card files were the main source of station information up to March 1927. Additional information came from the FCC's history card files, available from the FCC's public reference room on the second floor of 1919 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. This data was double-checked against a number of sources, including the Radio Service Bulletin Grant, Deletion, and Cumulative Station Lists, original 761 forms, and the station licenses at the Washington National Research Record Center in Sweetland, Maryland. Hope you enjoyed this article written by Thomas White and here on After Dark number 4. Thanks for listening, and now we'll go over to tape number 4 and some more broadcast highlights.